This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
The New Yorker's Andrew Marantz writes about all sorts of things here at the magazine: politics, media, technology, and any combination of those things. But every once in a while, he takes a break from all of that to write about something a little simpler: pop music.
So I was sort of clicking around YouTube, and I found this guy, Chili Gonzalez. Okay, great. So, hi, I am Andrew Marantz, and who are you?
I'm Chili Gonzalez. I'm a pianist, composer, and entertainer, and I'm Canadian, proud Canadian, living in Europe's last liberal democracy, Germany.
He was both a musician and also kind of a critic of pop music, but he also kind of knew the entire Western musical canon. He's someone who has touched a lot of the music that you might have heard on the radio, but you might not have ever known his name. He has worked with Drake and Feist and Daft Punk. When it came to his own music, it was like he was experimenting with 1,000 different things. You know, he made these kind of really fun pop hooky rock songs. He made these rap songs that it was unclear whether he was even taking them seriously or whether they were a total joke.
I'm self-created. I took my inner Larry David and exaggerated it. Plus, I want to be.
He did these kind of little Eric Satie-like piano experiments. He had this clear instrumental talent and a clear breadth in his musical knowledge, but it was almost like he didn't know where to apply himself with those talents. It wasn't really like commercially finding its audience.
For me, I was always faced with a choice that I now realize was a false choice. People sort of said, your music can be serious, but then you have this other side that's very playful and funny and sarcastic. And it seemed like people were constantly telling me to, you know, pick a side, which is the thing I guess I was always fighting against, this idea of the polite pianist, the humble musician. And I thought, well, most musicians I know are a very strange cocktail of megalomania and insecurity anyway. So I thought, well, let's just turn that into the story.
So eventually he just made an album called Solo Piano, which was just him playing the piano. Very sort of structurally simple, but melodically really dense and really interesting compositions. And that kind of got a cult following. And one of the people who really loved that album was Drake, the super famous rapper who apparently especially liked this one song called The Tourist, because on Drake's mixtape, So Far Gone, he just played The Tourist without crediting it. He just played it.
My ego was so tickled by the fact that Drake knew who I was and liked my song enough to use it. But then the other part of my ego was very frustrated that I hadn't been named or given a full shout out or any credit.
What was your next move? I mean, did you do like a Meek Mill kind of move and make a diss record about him? Or how did you get credit from or attention from him to acknowledge that that was your song?
Well, he was hosting the Junos, which are, dare I say, Canada's Grammys.
You can say it. Okay. Yeah.
And afterwards, he invited me to the studio, and I ended up playing the outro to Marvin's Room.
Have you heard that lately? I'm just saying you could do better. And I'll start hating only if you make me.
Which is one of my favorite Drake songs, and has, like, you know, a full 90 seconds of piano right at the end of the piece. And that actually happened on a little crappy synthesizer they had there. And I thought I was maybe showing it could be something like this. Once you rent me my Steinway piano and we officially do this. Little did I know that when I was just sort of showing what it might be, they were all doing that thing that you imagine they do in rap studios. Like, I'll try not to distort the mic here, but I finished and it was like, pause, and then, whoa! And I'm like,
that was the reaction.
I was like, but those are just some ideas. And they're like, no, that's it. And that's what you hear on Marvin's Room today. Hello, this is Chili Gonzalez with another Pop Music Masterclass for Eins Live Radio. And today we're talking about the gigantic hit from my fellow Canadian, Can't Feel My Face, by The Weeknd.
So in addition to making his own music and helping other people make their music, he also does this thing called Pop Music Masterclass, which is this series of videos where he sort of sits down at a piano and like shows you how a pop song works and what makes it so effective. He refers to himself as a musical humanist, by which he means that he can sort of hear references to classical music or to Tin Pan Alley music or to whatever and kind of draw on his encyclopedic musical knowledge and musical training to almost explain why pop music is so effective.
So I figure all these musical tools that were used by great composers, they travel through time and they end up in pop songs today. It doesn't mean that Taylor Swift knows necessarily that she's using, you know, musical symmetry, but instinctively she kind of feels that as a satisfying musical tool for her song and inadvertently is connected to when Mozart used it and inadvertently is connected to when 50s ballads were using arpeggios and connected to In the Mood, you know, connected to Hotel California. And all these songs that use arpeggios. So to me, it's just better to focus on what we have in common between musical styles. That's what musical humanism is.
You know, so we ain't really never had no old money.
I asked him to pick a song on the charts that he wanted to break down and analyze, and he picked the song Bad and Bougie by Migos. Hey!
Raindrops, drop top, smoking, no cooking, the hot box. Cooking, nick on your bitch, yeah, that. Cooking up dope in the crock pot.
So I've really been thinking about this song since it kind of broke through. I thought, well, why this one? Why now, in a way? And I think it's probably due to just the very opening of the song. And I think it paints a visual picture. The first line is raindrops, right? And what I love is that when he says the word raindrops, it's instantly coupled with this sort of high, tinkly sound, which is some kind of synthesizer, but not so dissimilar from a piano, right? It goes. And that's basically embodying the raindrops, you know, what would have been considered word painting in the golden age of romantic music. And often raindrops and things like that, these sort of images of water, got used a lot in impressionistic music. So this kind of Debussy, Maurice Ravel, 1920s Parisian classical music, which is very tinkly and... So it made me think of that right away, you know. But just to get back to this,
yep.
You have this very, very classic structure of 3+1, sort of stating a theme three times and then sort of tying a bow on it. You have it, you know. It repeats. And then there's a chord change and a note change. So There's this Beethoven symphony, I think it's the fifth, that has this sort of fanfare based on a like an alpine horn call, and it goes like something like this. So it's these groups of three, and then sort of you tie the bow on it. And you know, one of the most painful songs I ever had to learn as a child was Chariots of Fire, which uses this technique. What a saccharine piece of garbage this is, isn't it? I mean, really. Three times, and then really tie the bow on it, you know? But anyway, if you want to turn that into something more Migos-friendly, then you would just put it into a minor key, and it'll become a bit more gangsta, like this.
It's almost like for most of his career as a solo performer, he was kind of burdened by the breadth and depth of his knowledge, and he just knew so many different musical moves he could make and was kind of constantly trying to do all of them at once. But I feel like he's reached that point in his career where he knows what a musical humanist is in practice. It's just someone who shows up, listens to the music, has a well of knowledge to respond to it, and knows what the music needs.
That's pianist, composer, and producer Chilly Gonzalez speaking with The New Yorker's Andrew Marantz.